Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Mark Wayne Glassmeyer was just 10 years old when his parents gave him his first guitar for Christmas. That self-proclaimed shy kid from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, turned his childhood dreams of being a rock star into a professional career of writing and recording music. On this edition of Americana Music Profiles, we talk about his life in music and his latest CD, Can't Be Denied.
Hi, Mark. Welcome to the podcast this afternoon.
Hi, Greg. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you. Good to get a chance to chat. You are in Texas, right?
I am. I'm actually in Arlington, Texas.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Right in between Dallas and Fort Worth. Yeah. People that don't know where it is. Yeah. Right in between.
Is that where you grew up, or is that just where you ended up?
No, that's where I ended up. Yeah, I'm originally from Pennsylvania, born and raised in Eastern Pennsylvania.
All right.
A little steel town called Bethlehem.
Yeah.
So.
And I think I read where you kind of get started early with your music and a Christmas present, I believe, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I got a guitar for a Christmas present when I was, I think, around 10 years old, 10, 11 years old, something like that. And I was wanted to be a rock star.
Like every young boy, right?
exactly. Yeah, so I've been playing quite a while.
So give us a little bit of the story. How did you get from Guitar for Christmas to where you are today?
Wow, that's a long story. I'll give you the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I grew up, I'm a child of the 60s, so I grew up listening to where I lived, you know, on the East Coast. I didn't have a whole lot of exposure to, certainly not country music as it is today, because the country music today was really more like, you know, folk rock when I grew up. And that's kind of what I was, that's kind of what I cut my teeth on growing up and listening to pretty much primarily singer-songwriters, you know, the James Taylors and the Cat Stevens and people like that, and the Simon and Garfunkel, and Love the Harmonies, and of course then Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And I took on the guitar at a pretty young age and never really took it seriously. Kind of like every kid that gets a new toy, it's great for the first couple of months and then it kind of collects dust in a closet or under the bed. And that's kind of what happened with me. My parents provided me with guitar lessons for a couple of months. And when they realized I wasn't practicing, you know, practicing the scales and practicing the things they wanted me to do, I ended up losing interest, and they said, well, heck with this. We're not going to waste our money.
Yeah.
And so I put it away for a while and then picked it back up again. And the good news was out of the lessons I had, I learned, you know, four or five basic chords.
Right.
And as I grew older, I took the guitar back up again and fiddled around with it. And once I got to high school and college, I started to take it more seriously again, got into college, and was really cool. You know, it was really cool. Chicks love guys with guitars, you know.
Right.
So it was, I was a pretty shy kid, too. I was an athlete. I played sports, football and wrestling, and went to college for wrestling, as a matter of fact. But I was very shy, and my guitar was my outlet.
Sure.
And I would, I literally would sit in the men's bathroom in the dorm I was in, because it really echoed. It had great sound in there, and I'd play my guitar in there, and it sounded much better than I was. But anyway, one thing led to another. I started playing small clubs, coffee houses, and that's eventually how I paid the rest of my way through college, was playing in any place that would have me.
Yeah, wow.
And that led me to, being on the East Coast, that led me to playing, I only lived an hour and a half from New York City, and of course there was a big folk scene up there, and so I started taking a bus to New York City at least once a week. A buddy of mine and I, another guy, technically he was a peer of mine, but we were both solo acts in our town of Bethlehem, PA, and so we said, well, let's go up there together, because we were both kind of at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And we were both kind of nervous, shy, and stuff, so we would take the bus up to New York and play up there at the open mics. The very first night we went, and this was now in the 80s, and the very first night we went to a place called Folk City, which was the mecca of folk music back in the 60s and the 70s. Everybody, Dylan got a start there, and everybody who was anybody played at Folk City. And lots of country artists, too. Towns Van Zandt and all these guys, they all played there. And anyway, so we went in there to play the open mic, and we got there, and you had to pull a number, and I was like number 72, and he was number 73. And, of course, we took the bus in, so we're waiting around. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning till we finally got up to play, each individually. I got up literally, it was the host, and her name was Sunny Oaks, who was the sister of the late, great Phil Oaks, who was a big folk icon. And she was there. She was the host, and then there was the sound guy and the bartender and a couple of drunk people. That was it. We'd already missed our bus back. So we just stayed there all night and played, and it led to other gigs.
Huh.
And eventually, we ended up teaming up, being a duo, and one thing led to another, and played there for 3 nights a week for years in the village, which was a big thing for us in New York City. And,
sure, yeah, wow.
But that led to somebody hearing us, actually hearing me, and it led to going to Nashville to doing some demos. And one thing led to another. Demo ends up getting in the hands of somebody from Warner Brothers, and they encouraged me to come to Nashville. So I did some more demos down there. And before you know it, I moved to Nashville, and which was a very big step. This was now in like 1995. I started going to Nashville. I was a member of Nashville Songwriters Association, which was a really good organization for songwriters. And anyway, one thing led to another. Ended up moving to Nashville, was there for 10 years, and went through a really nasty divorce, and it made a lot of sense. I had to move out of there anyway, so I'm going to move to Texas because I had some connections down in Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I ended up here.
Yeah,
so now,
wow. That's a long journey. When you kind of began picking the guitar back up more seriously, was there ever a thought, hey, you know what, maybe I could do this professionally, full-time, I kind of see this path ahead of me now kind of thing, or was it always kind of just being at the right place at the right time?
You know, it's probably a combination. I mean, deep down inside, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do it full-time as a profession, but In all honesty, being totally transparent, I mean, I probably wasn't confident enough to... Other people told me I was good enough, but I wasn't sure I believed it myself, you know? So I always had a job. I always worked, even during all that time, even when I was making trips back and forth to New York, I had a full-time job working construction. My parents had my dad was a contractor, so I worked construction days, and then I'd jump in the car and... Well, initially I took a bus, but eventually I started driving in, and I'd get off of work at around 5:30, get cleaned up, drive to New York, play for 3 or 4 hours, turn around, drive back, get home around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and go to work again at 6 o'clock in the morning. So, but I did that for years, but the passion and the desire was there.
Yeah.
That's really what I wanted to do. And, you know, I was never confident enough, at least during those times, to feel like, well, I just need to do this full time. I wanted to, but I had a wife and three stepkids and was trying to raise the family and keep a roof over their heads.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a tough juggling act. Lots of people go through it. It's a tough thing. Way better if you're single. Way easier in a lot of ways, you know.
Was there a time during that when you recall feeling that confidence kind of click in? I mean, you're already doing it, and you mentioned a couple of minutes ago feeling like you didn't quite have the belief in yourself yet. Do you recall when that happened?
I'll tell you what I think it was for me. I was down in Nashville. I was still living in Pennsylvania, but I was going back and forth to Nashville quite a bit, primarily with the Nashville Songwriters, doing things with the Nashville Songwriters Association. And I went to the Bluebird. You're familiar with the Bluebird, I'm guessing.
Yes,
Bluebird Cafe is a very famous place in Nashville, and it's kind of the place as a songwriter, singer-songwriter. It's kind of like the place to play.
Right.
And, I mean, short of, you know, one of the big stages, but it's a really important place to play. It's see and be seen, one of those things. Very intimate, very small. And anyway, I went there with some friends, and I was still really pretty shy. And I went in there, and probably not real confident, but I went in there, and there was an open mic. And there was this guy. There was actually the open mic there was on a Monday night, and you think, well, everybody in Nashville is great. Well, that's not.
Right.
There's a lot of really great people, but there's a lot of people that, you know, probably aren't ready for it.
Right, right.
And I went in there thinking, I watched this guy, and he was not very good. And he had recently moved there from some place far away. And he'd moved to Nashville because he was following his dream. And he got up there, and he was, again, he wasn't, not to be critical of anybody, but he just wasn't ready and was not very good. And I thought, man, if this guy can do it, if this guy has the confidence to do it, I got to have the confidence to do it.
Yeah.
And that really literally led to me moving there. I moved there probably the next year or maybe even within the next 6 months. I mean, it was a real short period of time from when I saw that guy.
Yeah.
I need to make this commitment. If he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was kind of the turning point for me.
That's awesome. I think I read, too, where you had an opportunity to Phil's daughter, but I think you got to work with him on a PBS show. Is that right?
Well, not with him because he had passed away back in the early 70s, I think. But Phil Oakes, they have a Phil Oakes song night.
Okay.
He was like legend in the village back in the 60s. He was equivalent. Really, they said he was second only to Bob Dylan, and he was. The difference was not to take anything away from Bob Dylan, because Bob Dylan is Bob Dylan, but he was pretty well respected, and he started, this was the 60s, and he became very politically active, and he was, by today's standards, it would be considered mild, but at the time, he was very outspoken and kind of took a different path.
Okay.
But at any rate, still very well revered, and they have I don't know if they still do it, but I know that they did. They had been doing it, certainly when I was there, they would have every year. In fact, it's around this time of the year, it's like October, November, they have a Phil Oakes song night. And all the old folkies, like Dave Van Ronk would play there, and Tom Paxton, and Melanie, and Joni Mitchell showed up one night, and all these folk legends would come out, and they'd do Phil Oakes songs. And I was part of that, actually on a couple of occasions where was filmed on PBS, and it was really quite an experience. Yeah,
that's neat. Was that pre or post Nashville?
That was pre.
Yeah,
that was pre.
Okay.
Yep, pre Nashville.
And I think I also read that songwriting is kind of been a pretty significant piece of this for you too. Is that right?
It is. Yeah, it has been. That's another thing. I really didn't start writing seriously until probably around when I started going to New York, which was in the mid 80s.
Okay.
And that's when I really, and again, being around up there, being around other writers like that's really, it was truly my first exposure, other than the radio, you know, to hearing people do songs that they wrote themselves. And so it was, for me, it was kind of like an eye-opening period, and I started to you know, as he became more confident, you know, it's not easy. No. It's not easy to write, to, as a writer yourself, as a journalist, you know. It's you're laying everything out on the line, and you're setting yourself up for criticism and people making fun of you. Name it. So it takes some guts to do it.
Yeah.
And but you know, it took me. That's another thing. Even recognizing myself as an artist, to say, yeah, I'm an artist. It took me a long. You know, again, I came from a blue collar family where you worked, everything you did, you pick up a hammer and you hammer it. That's like you can see, you can hold it in your hand. It's not like artsy stuff.
Yeah.
And so it took me a long time to acknowledge that I am an artist. And, but now I embrace it.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to acknowledge that.
How was the music scene in that you were immersed in on the East Coast? How did that differ, and how was that experience for you moving to kind of the mecca of music, Nashville, and trying to experience songwriting in that part of the country?
Well, I'll tell you, it's in some ways it's drastically different, and in some ways it's very, very similar. In fact, the first time I went into the Bluebird, it reminded me so much of Folk City. It was like going back. It was almost like, geez, is this the same town?
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the quality of the performers and the writing, certainly at least the part that I was in, Nashville is light years ahead in terms of where I was at the time. It was because these were in Nashville. These are professional writers. This is what they do.
Right.
And you have that. You have it in a city the size of New York. You have that too, but it's not as concentrated. It's more spread out. In Nashville, you know, there's 15,000 to 20,000 songwriters right in Nashville.
Sure.
Nashville, although it's grown quite a bit, it's nowhere near the size of New York City, and it's all pretty much concentrated in one or two areas.
Right. Yeah.
And so everybody in Nashville is a songwriter or knows somebody who is a songwriter, has some kind of connection, you know, and it's everywhere. And it was a bit intimidating at first because even like as a performer and playing my guitar, I mean, you think you hear the best and then you go out in some of these places and somebody just knocked it out of the park and it's like, holy cow.
Yeah, yeah.
It was kind of like, geez, I don't even know if I want to play in front of these people, you know, because some are so good.
Yeah,
it's crazy. And it's the same thing with the writer. So it's you know, it's interesting. I was really blessed to have had that exposure that I had where I did, and then to take it, in my opinion, it was like taking it up the next notch was going to Nashville and writing there and learning so much. I'd never co-written a song until I got to Nashville.
Okay.
Well, actually, That is not true. It was a result of me going to Nashville that I ended up co-writing my first song, but it was with somebody that I met there.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I'd never even heard of it before, of co-writing. I never, other than, you know, famous Broadway people, I'd never heard of co-writing. It was like you do it on your own.
Huh.
So you
spend a season in Nashville, and over the course, I'm assuming during that time, and then you moved back to Texas. You picked up a couple of songwriting awards and got a new record out called "Can't Be Denied." What number is this for you?
It's actually technically it's my fifth CD, but it's my seventh project.
Okay,
I did one. I had a project called "Sad Songs," which was an LP that I did back in early 1980s, and then I did an EP with a group of friends from New York, as a matter of fact, I did an EP that was like mid-80s, and then the CD, advent of the CDs came around in the 90s, so this is my fifth CD.
And this one is out, or on the way out? How long?
It is. It technically, officially, it dropped in October 12th, but okay. It's actually been available for a little bit longer than that.
And obviously you've written all of the songs on the CD. How long did it take you to put this one together?
You know, this one was a combination of some old stuff and some new stuff.
Okay.
And so it's some stuff that I had recorded, but I guess written but never really recorded and released. So it was probably the recording period itself took about 3 months, but the... you know, I would say probably a year, year and a half it took to put it together.
Okay.
to where I thought it would be a product.
What's it look like? No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just say it's somewhat eclectic is probably too strong a word,
yeah.
Because the songs all have a common thread. But if you listen to it, you'll hear you can pick up different influences.
Okay.
Let's say.
Yeah. And what's it look like to be on tour with this? Do you have a specific tour schedule that you're working now, or what's playing out look like for you?
Well, I am actually working on my 2019 schedule right now. I mean, I've played a bunch of dates this year, you know, basically promoting the new record, but I'm really focusing on 2019. So I'll through North America, including Canada. And I'll be doing some things, possibly even in Mexico. I've performed down there before, and I've always done really well down there, and believe it or not. And, and I'm hoping also to get over to the UK. I've got quite a following over there. So possibly Australia, New Zealand, but that's kind of a long shot right now.
That's awesome.
But I'm getting a lot of airplay there, which is always amazes me.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. I just had, a funny thing. I just had this week. I got a message on Facebook from a guy in Ireland, and he said, "Hey, dude, my band and I just recorded one of your songs, and we love it, and we'd like you to take a look at it and take a listen to it."
Wow.
And it was really kind of is a song that I put out. It was a single for me back in 2012, and it had actually done pretty well. And, but they just recorded it. So it's really, you know, it's funny because I was listening to this and I thought, I'm listening to this song. Did I write that? Holy cow, it's actually pretty good. I pat myself in the back.
Yeah,
you're all right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good indication that the artist in you finds its way out, even if you don't think it does. You know, when you can appreciate your own work and actually be disconnected from it from the perspective of that you're not even sure you're the one that wrote that.
I know, and you know, it's funny because, you know, you listen, you sing your songs live, and then you listen to your own recordings, but it takes on a whole nother life when somebody else does it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, you can really sit back and listen to it.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah,
geez, this is actually pretty darn good. I can't believe I wrote that.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Where can folks find your tour schedule, get a copy of your new CD? What's the best way to get in touch?
Best way to get in touch is probably go to my website, which is markwayneglassmeyer.com. Glassmeyer spelled GLASMIRE. Markwayneglassmeyer.com, all one word. That's the best place to look. It's currently not up to date. I need to get it up to date. I've got somebody working on that for me right now. I do a lot of private stuff and a lot of corporate stuff. So I don't typically post that, but I'm going to start putting that stuff on there.
Okay.
Just to fill up my schedule. But that it'll, you know, within the next few weeks that should be populated and look pretty good. So that's the best place. You can also find me on Facebook. You know, most of the social media platforms and Google me. I'm on there. I actually have a Wikipedia page. How about
wow,
that?
Cool.
I'll tell you, I'm styling, man. But I don't even know how it got there, but
yeah.
It's there. And so I'm sure it's all true.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. But that's the best place. Probably go to my website.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Well, thanks, Mark. It's been fun.
Thank you, Greg. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.